You're listening to the Brenton Not On Tour Quarantine Cast. So far, he's taught you about good coffee.
Damn, Jimmy, this is some serious gourmet shit.
Good music.
I'm like this, you know, and then that becomes your thing. Music just does that.
And the secrets to good travel.
Exits. Okay, there's one back here.
And there's probably one over by the wing somewhere.
Now, thanks to COVID-19, he's here to make sure that you're all good during this time of social distancing and self-isolation. So sit back and enjoy as he broadcasts from any number of exotic locations like Costa del Balconia, La Isla del Garage, Playa del Living Room, and the always magical Puerta Vallarta. And don't worry, he's already had the coronavirus and beat it. Still, maybe keep a mask handy. Here's BD.
Yes, it is return of the Quarantine Cast this week with my very awesome guest, Daryl Hers of Indie Week Canada. That's happening November 10th to 14th in the city of Toronto. And all over the world and online, because they've had to go there this year and change it up a little bit. But what is Indie Week? You're going to have to check it out for yourself, indieweek.com. But it is a go-to, must-go-to if you're an independent band or any band looking for guidance, agents, managers. You want to jump into some panels. You want to learn a thing or two about how to promote your product, how to, you know, put music out in today's age. All of it, all available to you. Indie Week, November 10th to 14th. By this week's guest, Daryl. And also, he's a director of marketing for CD Baby. And they are a completely, completely online digital resource for musicians. So I recommend you check it out. He's an expert on the independent music scene in Canada and around the world. And he made some time to come on and talk about all of it this week. Now, towards the end of the interview, we start talking about this amazing fund called the Unison Benevolent Fund. They helped me out in this time when things were a little wacky. Well, it's still wacky, but they helped me out anyways as far as people out of work and, you know, sent a couple of bucks our way to kind of put food on the table and all the rest of it. And I thought it was really awesome. And I feel like I want to give some of that back. So Daryl, you know, came to the forefront and supported me by coming on this podcast. So I'm going to support him. And I've purchased 5 passes to go to Indie Week, November 10th to 14th. Now, we're not just going to give them away for nothing. You got to do the classic. You got to like, you got to share, you got to get it out. We're going to keep an eye and we're going to keep a tally online on who's doing it, tagging us and everything. And the people who do it the most, well, they're going to win passes to check out Indie Week, November 10th to 14th online. Man, I want to keep one for myself, but I'm going to give it away and I'll have to just buy another one. So check it out, indieweek.com, November 10th to 14th. My guest, Daryl Hers. We're going to chat about it all this week on the returning Quarantine Cast. Here we go. Just in time to talk about the state of the music industry, as well as these leading up to a very busy time in his life. Daryl Hers, how are you from Indie Week Canada, as well as CD Baby, man? How's it going?
Things are really crazy, as you said, and pretty exciting. So thanks for having me here.
So you're leading into Indie Week, which we'll dive into. I'm fascinated by Indie Week because I used to go to Canadian Music Week when I was in a band way back in the day, and just that process and getting selected, it was so exciting. And I'm sure it's all changed for you. So there's so much to dive into. But before we get going, your publicist told me that you were a coffee head, and I need to know if you've got one on the go right now.
Actually, I think during these times, I'm on the 5-hour energy shot train right now. And
I used to be on those, and then I discovered coffee, and that was it for me.
Yeah, on certain days, I do the salted caramel mocha right now from Starbucks and a 5-hour energy shot. So yeah. Lots of sugar, lots of caffeine, and lots of vitamin B, I guess.
You got a go-to coffee place where you are?
Well, Starbucks is close. I know it's not the best, but it's what's convenient right now.
Gotcha. Well, you can go to those all over the world and get the Pike, and it's, or an Americano. It's hard to mess that up. So anyways, Welcome to this show. Huge, music-based show. Generally, I try to do a lot of music chats with different guys. And in this particular case, we're going to Talk a little bit about what's happening with the state of the business right now. And I'm sure you're getting a lot of requests as you head up to major corporations that deal directly with independent music and things like that. So first and foremost, let's get going with like where you got rolling on this thing. So you've got quite a busy background, and now you've kind of, you're with Indie Week and CD Baby, but take me back to, you know, the beginning of this for you, that journey of the music, how it started for you.
It's really kind of like, you know, all the way back as grade six is somehow I knew music was what I wanted to do, period. And it was, I had to fight for it. Like, you know, I was going to grade seven. I'm like, oh, cool, they've got music as a course. And they're like, cool, saxophone. And I'm like, no, I want to play guitar. So I eventually went through college for music, taking guitar and composition. Was in bands. I grew up in Edmonton. We moved to Toronto because this is where the music industry was.
Yeah.
My band basically quit and went back to Edmonton. So I was here in Toronto by myself, and I kind of just had to hustle. During that time, I've been a booker for venues. I've managed bands.
How long have you been in Toronto for?
Since 95.
So I mean, in it.
Yeah, like I've seen the whole like Queen Street scene and all everything. So, and I did a portion of it, you know, being a broke musician to try to save costs. I took desktop publishing, you know, let me make my own posters and CD covers. But I actually ended up getting hired like a few weeks after I finished that course on freelance gigs. And I've been actually self-employed ever since. And that was about 96. It's crazy, but I've done, like, I helped Canadian Tire launch their website. With Live Nation, I worked as a freelancer for 8 years, and I actually rebranded the company. I did launch VIP Nation with them and worked on so many projects. It's really crazy.
Small world. I do a lot. I mean, that's what I do, you know, full time is basically when there was a full time in our business was running concerts for touring all over this fine planet of ours. So certainly familiar with your work. So, and I deal with VIP Nation all the time. So look at that, you know?
Yeah. So I've always had the digital side kind of kicking in the background.
Yeah.
So, you know, as things are right now, I'm kind of like now in my element even more, which is kind of exciting. But during that, I started Indie Week. That was around, I think it was 2003. Like, this is like our 18th year, I believe. Like, it's crazy. It's been so long. And it was starting as a hobby. Like, it wasn't meant to be as it is right now. It just kept growing. And, like, it was just literally meant to showcase new emerging artists in Toronto, get them in front of some industry or help educate them. And it just kept growing, and internationally more and more interest. And then we started doing stuff in Ireland, and then we moved it to UK. And then I've been doing stuff in Brazil. It's really been a crazy ride. Like, to think of, like, I think our first year we had 6 venues and 40 bands. Last year, I think we were at 230 artists and 25 venues. It's crazy.
That idea that comes out now, Canadian Music Week in Canada, North by Northwest was all coming up. North by Northeast, there was South by Southwest. There's all these different things. Where did, you know, that getting that started as far as Indie Week? Hey, I'm gonna go for it. That must have been, you know, just throw it against the wall and see if it's going to stick. Was that sort of the idea first? And then it kind of ballooned from there? Or did you actually get a lot of support leading into that to kind of help you?
I was really lucky. I was booking a venue called the B-Side, which was on top of Fez Boutique, corner of Peter and Richmond. So I was dealing with bands all the time. And there I had a support from Amsterdam Brewery, and they supported Indie Week at the start for the first few years. So I had a sponsorship right away to help launch it, which was great. And I was booking at shows across town, so I also knew a lot of the venues. So it actually was really easy to start. I called 6 venues, they said yes, and I put the word out, and bands applied, and it wasn't that hard. When it gets to like 25 venues, then there's politics and all this kind of stuff that goes into it. But yeah, it was launch it, And it was in response to locally artists weren't being represented at a lot of festivals. Like really good artists were being overlooked and not getting in. And, you know, as I've sort of learned over the years, there's a lot of politics involved. I'll get back to like, mm-hmm. put that word in there again. And often it is who you know, or, you know, certain things that get you in.
The politics side of it never, I mean, especially when, I mean, it's the classic, like, well, sure, you know, there's all these indie bands that are really, really close to signing, or they've already signed but still considered indie, but have agents. And then, you know, you want bigger acts, but then you need to take the other acts. And then, so it's a thing, right? And that must have drove you a little crazy.
Yeah, it did. Like, cause, well, that was why I started it though, because like I was working with some acts and like none of them could get into some of these festivals. And like we're selling out clubs, like we're drawing people, but just could not get that attention. So that was the reason for it. And then, you know, as going forward, like I said, it was like just a hobby at the start and it just kept kind of growing. Yeah, it's interesting to see how that process goes. Cause at the very start, people would be like, so you're like Canadian Music Week. No, we're different. Oh, so then you're like North By. No, we're different. And then like, well, what artists are playing? And I'm like, well, that's the point. You need to discover them. Like these are the new artists, and that's the point. And you know, it was about 5 years of just trying to change mindsets of people in the sense that people like to compare things and people like to similarity with things. And so to just go against the grain and go, it's about discovering new artists.
Which is difficult to do now with like the fact that radio's dying and that there's really, I mean, we had a great, that stretch through, you know, 94 to 2000. Was crazy, right? For, I mean, well, anytime, but really that 90, let's say 92, probably all the way up to 2000, as far as indie, that really crazy scene that was happening on Queen, but in Toronto, across the country, bands just going gold in Toronto, like, you know, things like that. But radio was so prominent then, and you literally would listen to the radio to find out where you were getting your information from. And it's like, hey, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. In this particular case with radio going away, if we fast forward it to now, it's still a little bit there, but I mean, it's got to be double hard trying to promote that out in today's current culture.
Yeah, and also during that time, remember, Much Music was around and videos were really heavy. So there was places to aspire. Like if I could get my song here, then something could happen, right? And now that's even harder. It's very DIY. So if anything, yes, I feel it's a bit harder for artists in the sense that there's so much out there right now. Like how do you get found as like, this is my YouTube video against millions of YouTube videos, and same thing on Spotify.
You know, and I recall, you like, know? You know, when I played in a band back then, it was like, all right, we got to get a song and we got to get it to Edge 102 or whatever, or 97.7 or The Wolf in Peterborough or something. And every market had theirs, right? Yeah. And it was all about making friends with the jocks. If you can get a guy that like totally loves your band, maybe they'll play you. And then they had the indie shows. And then it was like, we're on the radio on Thursday, right? Yeah. And you would jump on that like crazy and promote their shit out of it. And then maybe you had a show at Lee's Palace. And it was just, there was this step of, if you followed these things, then maybe it would lead to something else. And now it just seems it's like, do whatever. I mean, is there a, is there a playbook anymore? And you see this from Indie Week, like, but is there a playbook anymore to try to break an act?
Yes, but most people don't know about it. You know, you just sort of said exactly what I've said to some people. Like you hit it right on. Like when I was first playing, like we're going back 1990, this is a long time ago. There was and back then you could not play originals. You had to play covers. None of the bars, at least in Alberta and Western Canada, none of the bars cared about originals. They only wanted covers. So you had to play covers. Mm-hmm. And there was a C circuit, a B circuit, and an A circuit. And you kind of paid your dues, but you knew what to do to get to that next level. And you knew what venues were that next level and so on. And, you know, just give you an example of like who is on that circuit is like Age of Electric was part of that.
Yep.
Prior being Age of Electric, they were called just Electric. And if you think of what band has an album called Electric, The Cult. So they played a lot of Cult songs and, yeah, and so forth. Right. And Age of Electric was one of the bands that crossed over to doing originals, that they were leaders in changing that. So then bands started being able to play originals in bars. But we all knew what we had to do to get to the next level. Nowadays, there's no real system, you know, like how do you even get an agent anymore as a band? And what does that mean? You know, like it's
somebody crazy. Asked me a little while ago. I mean, and this is just a question for the industry. This isn't a slight on anything or anything, but the question was, what's the role of the agent now? I know some agents and it's changing all the time. I mean, we all, you know, a lot of the agents that when I started in 94 are still doing it. So great, you know, awesome. But what is the new role of the agent? Because when you're coming through as an indie kid and you're trying to play shows, the idea was get an agent who would get you on to opening for Age of Electric, or they represented Age of Electric and they, you know, would bring in the new talent and work with the managers to break new talent. And I just wonder what the new role of the agent is now.
Agents are super crucial right now getting to the point of getting an agent is one step, but then building up your value and moving up the priority list of their roster. Cause they'll have a roster and you start at the bottom of their roster and you got to move up. Agents are the gatekeepers. Agents are crucial. So for instance, if you think of it, developing artists will often tour as an opening act for a priority artist on an agent's roster. Mm-hmm. So, because the agent just knows I'm going to bring this baby band up to a higher level, and basically their percentage is off the whole bill because it's all their artists. So they're not giving away to another one. And if they are, they may do a deal with a different agent and say, my band needs to play with this band on your roster, and I will take a band from yours and put it on with mine. So, you know, as that emerging artist, like I remember back in the day coming up, I would go to a band and say, hey, could our band open for yours? And we might have a chance. But now if that band has an agent, there's almost no chance. And like the band doesn't necessarily have the right or ability to say who's going to open for us because the agents figured that out. Then on top of that, a lot of agents have the deals with the festivals. So a lot of the bigger festivals, like, you know, the festivals that are in a field like Coachella or anything like that, you know, it's dealing with the agents and they've got, like, I know in Canada, for instance, they might do a package deal. Like, we've got this artist in your territory. We can give them to you at this price and so on. And then that means, like, I remember one year I saw July Talk in almost every festival I went to. And I saw the Sheepdogs at every festival I went to. And you start seeing similar lineups and it's like, oh, they're moving those artists through territories across Canada as a package. So it's like festival in Alberta equals the same almost lineup as festival in Ontario and so on. And then as a emerging artist, you're like, hey, can I get on that bill? No, all the slots are taken by the agents.
So and I don't think that's harder. Changed my, and the thing is that even at that point, you know, when I was doing shows back in 95, 96 or whatever, when I was promoting shows, it was, hey, you got to take this and this. And then I would get one spot for a local, which is fine. And half the time I have to put my band on it, cause that's the only way we could get those kind of shows. So it was like, I'll take the tour and then I'll put us on to open up. So that was a lot of fun to be a part of, but then it was crucial in meeting agents and stuff. Now I see agents of all kinds. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, if I can add one thing to that, though, is the agents are super smart. They're so good at what they do, and I really respect them for it. But where it's even harder is they've planned out farther in advance than what they were before. So right now, for instance, I believe it was last week, Sharon Osbourne put out that she's booking Ozzy's next tour for 2022, because if she doesn't book it right now, there's not even going to be spots available for her to book. So
she has to book it. Scrambling, yeah.
Yeah, but that's how far in advance they are as well. In some of the festivals that I worked with in Europe or friends of, they've already announced their lineup for October next year. And so that's what's also really hard as an emerging artist is like they let alone half the time don't know what they're doing in the next 6 months or as opposed to the next 48 months or 24 months that they can't even like by the time 2022 comes, they're like, oh yeah, we need to do shows. It's like, no, we're booking 2024 now. So that's the thing is everybody has to think farther in advance right now and plan it out.
Do bands still look at like Indie Week is like you got to get in and be part of the whole thing and you get part of the press that moves with it and all the rest of it. It was a great spot on all these to break acts or bands that were these kind of festivals sometimes used to have the reputation of a lot of the bands that were playing it. 75% were already signed up to an agency and it was really just the break. And it wasn't really traditional sense of indie. It's like, well, why is that band's already, Edge 102 is already, they're already number 10 at Edge 102. And obviously they got a thing, but it's not really indie anymore because they've got a deal. So there was a bit of a reputation of like, they weren't fully indie.
Right.
And it's funny since March, since the world shut down, and now we're back to square one, right? Now we're back to like, yeah, we need to still be breaking bands somehow. We still need to have bands kind of do their thing. So has that changed for you from that regard? Even just your platform for this year coming up from November to March. I mean, if you had to pivot it completely, I would guess.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like we weren't going to run Indie Week this year at all. Like early days, like, I think end of February or start of March, we made an announcement. We're going to pause this year because it's going to be too crazy. And here we are. It's really crazy and it's getting crazy. Like we're going back to lockdowns and all that kind of stuff. But what we saw about a month and a half in or 2 months in is that one, people need connection. And we saw the people in the industry starting to suffer. And they're looking for what's going to be next and how do we get there? So we thought it's much better for us to run and be a positive part of the community and moving forward. Two, I also believe that there's actually more opportunity than ever before right now. It's like we're all at the same level. Like some of the big stars are doing their own virtual live at home concerts on acoustic guitar, just like the band down the street. So there's kind of this leveling off where we're all the same right now. And I can't tell you the number of Zoom calls where it's like kids and pets are involved and things like that. And you'd be like, man, back in the day, you would get yelled at for something like that, you know? So there's a bit more understanding, a bit more compassion and humanity to it. And I think that right now is the time to connect. And you've got this great opportunity to connect internationally without having to pay for flights, hotels, meals, and all that kind of stuff. Now is the time, like I literally was just before this on a conference in Brazil that's happening right now called Trends. CD Baby, we had a panel earlier today where our CEO was on and stuff like that. So I'm connecting with people in Brazil right now. And I didn't have to go there. Last week, it was a webinar with Korea. Another one was in New York. I was on a panel for New York. So this is a time to build massive audience without actually leaving your home. And I think this is a great opportunity.
Is it all online this year for Indie Week? Is everything, all the performances online?
Yeah, so we're concentrating on the conference side this year, and it is all online. And with artists, we're looking to do sort of more artist pitches and B2B sessions, connecting them directly to industry reps. So, you know, instead of that, we're in a hotel and there's a panel like really far away and four guys talk for a bit and then they leave. We're actually doing mentorship sessions and B2B sessions where artists can actually talk directly to professionals and hopefully make a meaningful connection as well. And that's where we're at. Like, I think this is actually a real exciting time because, you know, back in the day, it was really hard to make those connections and it was hard to build relationships. And
it's funny because now you've got them locked on a computer screen. They can't walk to the next room.
That's it. Like, how many times do you see those panels and the panelists start running out as soon as they can? Yeah, right after.
It's the funniest thing. CD Baby. Now, we've been hearing about it for a lot of years. Just for the just break down the prominent role of CD Baby. I mean, I know you've taken on a bunch of different things. You guys have had to pivot in different kinds of media, but CD Baby, what is CD Baby?
All right. So CD Baby, we're basically an online distributor for independent DIY artists. We also have a publishing administration level, so it's called Pro. And basically, we could administer the rights of the artist so that we collect royalties globally for the artist. Saves them a lot of time and hassle. Sometimes, you know, the amount of it takes to just sign up and manage your accounts and all that could take a ton of time. And basically, the artists retain complete rights to their songs, their music. And it's just a way that artists can get their music out globally and collect royalties much easier than it sure was when I was an artist. That's for sure.
Are bands still making albums and selling, or is it just sort of, we've got a record for you to buy, but we know you're probably going to download it, or you're going to subscribe to iTunes or Spotify. It's going to be up there. I've heard some bigger artists say, what's the point of making records right now? Let's just put out one song every 3 months and then that's just the way it's going to go. So is that happening with CD Baby? Are people making full records right now?
Yes. Like, so that's one thing to think. Our name, CD Baby, we're digital distributors. We do warehouse distribution of CDs still for artists that still use that platform. So is CD sales down compared to before? Yes. In some niches and certain markets, they're still strong and steady. So for instance, I would say in Western Alberta, country music fans, they'll buy CDs for sure. 100%. Folk music fans tend to buy CDs. I was at Folk Alliance in New Orleans earlier this year. It was the last conference I was able to attend. And their CDs are still pretty big in that type of market. So I think it's an understanding of who your audience is and who your market is. And right now, what I'm seeing in Canada is people are willing to support these bands that are struggling by buying something right now. So yes, like right now is still a viable source of income if that's your market.
Are you pushing, are you allowed to push a medium like from the standpoint of like, we don't think you should make records now. You should do this. This is your best way to maximize income. This is the best way to maximize your brand. Do you obviously offer that service, but do you shy away from certain things or, and recommend your clients to go a certain way to try to give it the best shot?
Yeah. Like, so we've got a DIY podcast and a DIY blog, which is all about tips, tricks, and strategies. Also what tools to use. Obviously the international market is online and that's the way to go. So again, CD Baby, we're digital distributors. We do sell CDs if artists want it through warehouse, but it's a pretty small level compared to what it used to be for sure. I usually do a talk on how to do a release strategy for a DIY artist. There's a lot of tips and tricks, you know, like I tell artists that if you have one song, you should have about five versions of it. So an acoustic version, a single version, which in the old days we would call a radio edit, which usually means no guitar solos. And then you have the long version with guitar solos and all the extra stuff. But nowadays a big one is features. So if you collaborate with somebody and they remix your song, you could have their name associated with it. Or if you have somebody else sing on it, which is easy to do now, you get their audience and your audience exposed to the music. And then I often say do an acoustic version. And I also say do an instrumental version where you literally just hit mute on the vocals. And the reason for that is if there's a sync and license opportunity, they almost always want an instrumental with the full version, and it has to match exactly because they like mixing it in and out and it's sounding exactly the same. So often producers are like, oh, no vocals, let me fix it for you. And no, it's got to be exactly the same. Just hit mute, put it out, and then that's a good option for a sync, like getting placed in film and TV and things like that.
Is that an easier place to be? No, it used to be so, like, you needed a publishing deal, at least from the mid-90s when I remember coming through. There was a level, as we talked about, it was like, get it here, get the song out, get the publishing deal, record deal, sure, but publishing deal was very important to go after TV and film and all the rest of it. I just did a private performance for an artist, oversaw sort of a Zoom performance for, you know, a major movie studio who was going to sync that artist into, you know, 10 different kinds of film. And it seems like that's a crazy way right now, more than ever, or an easier way now for artists to get on the radar.
Absolutely. It's easier than ever before. Not easy to get selected, but easier to at least be part of the game. And so like CD Baby, we have a service, we have a whole sync and license team. So if the artist agrees to be allowed to be put into our database for that side of things, like you just got to click off a couple things. And meaning that music supervisors, the one thing that they like is to be able to do the deal super quick. Mm-hmm. Like there's times where it's like, do you have this? And I need it in an hour. And what they mean too is they need to have the rights cleared to use it in an hour. So I've seen a deal where we asked an artist, or this is before CD Baby, but I asked an artist about it. And they're like, oh, I got to talk to the bassist. He wrote part of it. I'm like, I need to know now because there's thousands of other bands wanting to take this. So music supervisors need to be able to just get the answer quickly. And so CD Baby, we actually have a database search and it's really intensive. It's crazy. You could be like, I want a song that sounds like it's from the 50s. That is 111 beats per minute in the key of A minor, and it'll find it, right? And you know, like we've done some pretty amazing things. So like the last round of Stranger Things, we had an artist place, I think it was like three songs in it, and they're just an independent artist, and it happened to be music that sounded like it's from the 80s, right? And so it's in Stranger Things. So yeah, it's basically, music supervisors are looking at catalogs of music now online, where before you had to know the music supervisor and you couldn't because there was no email address. There was only a phone number, but they wouldn't give it out. And so, yeah, so it's super, not super easy. It's way easier than it was in the past, for sure.
The desk of CDs no longer exists. The EPKs and the electronic press kits that we all spent so much money on to get into the mailroom so just to get on the radar. We played four shows with I Mother Earth.
All that.
Play us on the radio. Like, you know, we played seven shows with the Tea Party. I mean, obviously you're on an agent's radar by that point, but just a funny thing. But that struggle was like, and led to my next question about the ease of the business now. So we talked about the levels before, but it was like a structured out almost system to break an act.
Exactly.
And today, I watch a lot of live shows. I'm not on the management side or even tour managing side anymore, where you would see, you know, the process, but I do deal with a lot of managers. I do deal with a lot of agents from what I do now, from running concerts all over the place. But daily, it almost seems like every single day it changes. And am I wrong on that? Because before it was like, just follow these 20 steps. And if it doesn't happen after those 20 steps, you're probably out. Now it's like you got 1,000 steps to try.
You know what? You're 100% right. And I think, you know, another big part of our industry is that's come to light is our mental health. And I think as a result of like, there's this feeling, I haven't done enough today. And, I haven't posted enough on social, or I haven't got enough likes back on social. I haven't got enough engagement. I should be remixing. I should be writing. Like, now it's almost like, because there's no structure, I think a lot of people just feel like they haven't done enough yet. Right. They haven't either completed tasks or they haven't achieved their goals. And it's a, how do you even measure? Am I even moving forward? Like, I've done all this stuff. Has it even made a dent in anything? And, that guy, he's got thousands of plays. Why? You know, like, so I think it's a thing that we have to sort of address and put to light and sort of go, it's okay to be at this level as long as you're putting your own structure together and you can measure, are you improving or not, and how to change it. And I think this is a big part, you know, kind of tying back to Indie Week and CD Baby. It's a huge reason why we do education and focus on education so much, is that we're trying to give the tools to the artists that they can learn how to run their own business and how to be successful. And success doesn't necessarily mean I'm driving a sports car and have a mansion. It means I can have a career. I can monetize and have an ongoing career. You know, that's a huge reason why I've done Indie Week over the years, is educating and connecting, and even more so now. I'm busier than ever. It's crazy. We went from having no festival this year to we're doing a free online session every week, every Tuesday. It's called Indie Weekly, really creative title there. But we've built in 2 months a loyal audience that comes back, and they've said, some of them have said to me in personal messages, I look forward to this every week. And it's that community building. And we also have launched a mentorship program, and we're running it right now with CIMA, Canadian Independent Music Association, educating artists on how to be export ready. And it's kind of weird. People are like, export ready when we can't travel. I'm like, man, I've been online around the world almost every day since this has started, you know, and then we're doing the conference on top of it. So, education right now is a way to figure out a structure and a plan for an artist, I think.
Which comes back down to working hard. And really, at the end of the day, I've always been a proponent of talent wins.
Yes.
But talent also means how hard you're going to work at it. And we've heard the 10,000 hour rule and all the rest of it. Now, to me, it's 20,000 hours of research to just start on hour one of trying to break yourself, because it's really crazy watching an artist. But I'm amazed when, you know, you see the rise of an artist, but they seem to be mini rises, and they seem to be mini rises. So you kind of get this, like, the band can do 5 nights at the Commodore and then it's over. They're at the Biltmore. And then it's like the band can come along. And this is my big fear about the industry and where radio was propping up artists and kind of like breaking artists back in the day. There is a hit and run thing that's happening that I'm a little worried about, which is I don't see the next generation of arena acts. And I still, even with all of the arena and stadium shows and stuff that I'm doing right now, one out of every 10 artists the ones I'm working with are arena and stadium acts, but then you get support acts and you get some, I'm only seeing one out of every 10 support acts where I'm like, that thing could go. The rest of the time, it's like, you know, and it's a bit worrisome because it's a bit of a hit and run mentality with listeners. The mm-hmm. listeners like you for the, you know, and I'm a little worried about that.
You know, I've been sort of saying this for a few years, partly like, you know, I did work for Live Nation as a freelancer for like 8-9 years. And, you know, like I remember when Polestar released some of their stats, earlier this year, late last year, and, looking at sort of like the top 100 touring artists, and you look at number like top 10 and I'm like Rolling Stones, Madonna, U2, Elton John, the Eagles. I'm like, okay, well, that's 50% of top 10 and none of them, almost all of them are even from when I was a kid or earlier.
Yeah.
Tom Petty was still on there. Like, so even he hit top 10 for that small time he toured or whatever. Right. And so, I think it was Bruno Mars was on there and he was like, wow, there's one new artist. There might've been one other. And I think that was Adele. Right. And
over the last 5 years, you've got Drake in there. You've got, you know, some of the bigger ones that have come around. But the old rock, from a rock standpoint, it's tight. The country still seems to be doing well. But
yeah, well, this was out of everybody, and I got to also mention Metallica and AC/DC were on there, right?
Yeah.
But the other part was the top part of the list is like hundreds of millions. And then by the time, like, and this is in the top 10, when you get down to around 8, it's at 20 million or 40 million. It's like, that's a drastic drop, right? And you're trying to look at where's the new artists in the whole top 100 list. So I was sort of thinking this exact same thing. It's like, you know what? Those artists at that level in 10 years are not going to be touring. That's how much money is going to be lost or taken out of live touring for the bigger promoters. And so this is where agents come into play and promoters come into play. They have to look at the next wave. They have to develop the next wave so that they can stay in business. That just makes perfect logic sense. And it's a lot of money to, like, you know, U2 can come to town and sell out the biggest stadium 2 nights in a row. That is a lot of money. And as a promoter, agent, you want to replace that as your next level artist coming up, because you know you can't keep these artists forever. And with things going digital, like Metallica just did a drive-in concert. They went to a location, recorded a set. That's it. They no touring, no nothing. And it was in hundreds of drive-ins. So then you have to start thinking, will those artists really be motivated to spend 4 years on the road again, slogging it out? Or, hey, I would, you know, went to a place, played a set, and I went home. And it beamed out to like hundreds of drive-ins, and guaranteed that's going to be on Netflix next year. And there's so many more new revenue models that can come out of it. The one thing that you said, though, that's interesting is I've been watching, like, there's three generations going on right now. Old school, which is like, man, I can hardly wait for live concerts back. And it's like, well, I don't think they're going to go back to what they were, at least not for a couple years. And then there's the kids. Like, I watch my girlfriend's kids. They're like 8 and 11 or between 9 and 11. And they watched Diplo on Fortnite. Right. Do a DJ set for 20 minutes. 20 minutes, that's it. And during the 20 minutes, he had 5 guests. Crammed them in there. And millions of people tuned in. Like, not thousands, millions. Like, for 20 minutes, you can hit millions. Just imagine the sponsorship dollars that could take place, the royalties that could be collected. You know, I guaranteed somebody like a Live Nation might be looking at that more seriously, knowing that the stadium model may not be what it used to be coming back. So it's going to be a weird 5 years, I'd say.
It is. And a lot of people, though, are working hard, though, to make it come back in some capacity, and we all want it to come back regardless of, I mean, I still think there's nothing that will replace the live music experience.
Exactly.
Before I let you go, is there, just one more thing on Indie Week. What is the biggest success story out of Indie Week as far as artist wise? Has somebody broke out of there that you're like, holy shit, look at what happened after they played our festival?
Well, I'd say like there's artists that we had first, like Walk Off the Earth.
Right.
And I had to fight to get them on that show. It was hilarious. It was a guitar, it was a Gibson guitar showcase. And they're like, well, they're not a Gibson artist. I'm like, yeah, but we want to have them because guaranteed they're going to go. And sure enough, 3 months later, they put out a video and went huge. Prior to that, we also had Rival Sons. And they played like Cherry Cola's, one of the smaller venues, but great rock bar. We had them play, I think we had them play every night because they were so good. And sure enough, they've done really quite well for themselves. You know, and it's interesting, like Toronto is always had artists that come out of here, you know? So like even on musician side, like Dan Cantor, he was in a band called Avenue Road. I'm not sure if they played Indie Week, but around that time, it's all kind of a blur that year. But he's like Justin Bieber's music director. Ricky Tilo was Lady Gaga's music director. Donna Granti, she was playing in a band for us, and she became guitarist for Prince. So a lot of musicians, like it's almost like Toronto is this hotbed and you've got to be good. Like you have to be good, but often the case you end up going elsewhere, the States, to make a career. And, that's just part of the game. It seems like these days.
I got to see Donna play with Prince in Vancouver. I did the last four shows of Prince in Vancouver a couple years ago. And when he had the girls, and it was killer, man, it was awesome. So
she's amazing. She was in a band called Shasta Jade. And back then you knew something was going to happen. Like she just blew the roof off the place every time she played.
Tell us about Indie Week this week. Dates, times, where people can find it all online. And we'll get it out to as many people as we can to make sure they tune in, whether they're in a band or not. I think it's crucial if you know a musician or a friend that's in a band. Anything that can press this business forward and help it come out of this, you know, lull that we're in, as many eyes on Indie Week as possible would be great. So tell us all about that, my friend.
Yeah, so it's going to be online November 10th to the 14th, jam-packed schedule. We've got, CD Baby CEO Tracy Maddox is a keynote on the first day, really talking about the direction of the industry and where it's going. Throughout the week, we've got speakers from SongTrust Publishing, Bandzoogle, Show.co for marketing. And we also have international focuses. So we actually are working on different territories like Asia Pacific, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, UK, Ireland, Latin America, and Mexico, where we're going to have speakers talking about how it's in their market right now and how artists can start penetrating that market and how do they get a start. And then we've got B2B sessions, so you can talk to all these reps directly. We've got mentorships. Bandwagon is going to be part of it. We're actually giving away mentorships to artists.
Amazing.
You know, so education, connection, and then a really big message is diversity, inclusion, and mental health. Like, we are so wrapped up in the business side so much, and we know historically about an artist kind of like giving up so much of themselves, putting them out there, that we need to take care of them. And artists can be a bit fragile, especially during this time. So mental health is a big aspect as well.
Very much. I'm a big proponent of it, and music heals, and our industry supports each other greatly in this time. And hopefully our listeners here and everyone that's can tune into Indie Week and learn something, support a great cause. Daryl, I love what you're doing. I think it's so crucial. And I love the fact that you've pivoted here. That's the word of the year, to being able to take this online and still offering the service to people to get educated. And I appreciate the time that you made today to come on, man. And I'm happy to put this out to as many people as I can and get it out there for you, man. So
awesome. Thank you so much. And if I could just say, go to indieweek.com, IndieWeek.com. And tickets are on sale. There's attendee and delegate. Delegate allows you access to everything. Attendee just means I just want to show up and watch. But the one thing to note is we're supporting Unison Benevolent Fund this year, which is a fund and support system for anyone in the music business, whether you're an artist or manager, label, even if you work in the mailroom. They've got hotlines for help for mental health. They've provided funding for artists that are in real need during this time. So if you are purchasing a ticket at the checkout, we're taking donations of like up to $5. We're just helping to raise money for this cause as well.
How much for just a regular person that's not in the music industry but wants to attend the festival online, what's that cost them?
Depending on the timing, we're at early bird stage right now, so I think it's like $20. And I think as we get closer, it gets a little bit more, so I think it'll be $30 max.
So the Unison Fund helped me out, actually. And they were a big help for me during the time when obviously I lost my work and everything and going through. So one of the things I've been trying to figure out is how to reappropriate those funds in a way like, you know, that'll help me and but also help others. So what I want to do is I'm going to take the donation amount. I'm going to take 10% of that donation fund that they gave to me, and I'm going to buy 5 spots for anyone that wants to join Indie Week to check it out and learn something, to give back a bit. So just so you know, I'm a huge proponent of what you're doing, and I want to help in any way we can. So thanks to Unison Fund for helping me. Hopefully I can help a couple people jump on and learn something about the music industry and keep doing what you're doing, man. I appreciate it.
Wow, man. Thank you so much. That's an amazing gesture. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Everyone, go check it out. This is the Brenton on Tour, still in quarantine cast with Daryl Hurst. And we'll talk soon, buddy. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you.
It is your favorite girl. That's right, it's the Allie Mars, the one and the only. Everyone else just ain't me. I am the host of Welcome to Mars, a lifestyle podcast where nothing is off the table. I have come a long way from sex and dating and have transformed the new vibe to all things lifestyle. We still talk sex, but I'm more interested in the journey, where people have come from, how they made it, and where they're going. Subscribe or follow to a brand new look and a brand new era. Welcome to Mars.
Subscribe or follow on Apple, Spotify, Google, or at theallymars.com.
Because even with the new look, I'm still that same bitch you love to hate.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many rogues that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.